Welcome to Booked on KD&K. I'm your host, Gavin Dahl. Each week, Booked highlights authors, journalists, and newspaper columnists in their own words. Today, we feature some very impressive reporting from rural Colorado that touches on mental health, police training, government transparency, and freedom of the press. My guests by phone are Nikki Turner, editor of the Rio Blanco Herald Times, serving Meeker, Rangeley, and the surrounding area. Thanks for speaking to KD&K, Nikki.
Thank you, Gavin.
And Susan Green, veteran journalist based in Denver, who is a past finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and now editor of nonprofit news outlet The Colorado Independent. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
In early November, the Rio Blanco Herald Times published Through the Cracks, a riveting piece of investigative journalism about a man with paranoid schizophrenia named Daniel Pierce, who died last year at the hands of law enforcement in what some believe was a suicide by cop. But at the same time, this story is about the efforts by the town of Rangeley to keep the story out of the public eye. Nikki, you also wrote an editor's column that you titled The Stories That Must Be Told. You learned a lot while working on this story, not only about doing good journalism, holding governments accountable, the challenges of delivering mental health care in rural areas, but also about how this story impacted the readers of your paper, most of them people you know personally. I want to ask you about those reactions, but first, can you read the Why Now section from your column?
This is the question asked most often during the almost 3 months we've been working on this story. Why? Why bother? Who cares? Why now? It's been almost a year. Can't you let it go? Why do you need to publish this? Why does it matter? It matters because a man who fell through the cracks of our country's healthcare system died at the hands of a Rangeley police officer who believed he was forced to defend himself and his fellow officers. It matters because the careers of two veteran officers ended without so much as a how do you do or a see you later, just a deafening silence after decades of public service. It matters because public officials who represent the community and carry its trust were either unprepared or unwilling to be transparent when asked for information. In fact, they discouraged us from covering this story out of fear of public backlash. Fear seems to be the main reason for the silence. It's easy to be silent. Speaking up is risky. I have tremendous respect for the people who agreed to be interviewed for this story. It's a story that needs to be told. It's a story we as a community need to have discussions about in the future on several levels. I know not everyone will be pleased with this story, and I accept that. It's not our job to make everyone comfortable. We'll leave that to the likes of glossy magazines and partisan news sources that tell their readers just what they want to hear and nothing else. I'm not going to apologize for doing my job. I am going to apologize for not doing it a lot sooner. When Daniel Pierce's mother says she doesn't understand why no one seemed to care or contacted her after her son died, I take that as a rebuke. We didn't do what your local newspaper is supposed to do. We didn't tell the story. We allowed ourselves to be silenced right along with everyone else. Our job is to tell the stories as best we can, with as much integrity and honesty and accuracy and fairness as we can muster. I believe we've done that with this story.
That's Nikki Turner reading from her column, The Stories That Must Be Told, in the Rio Blanco Herald Times. You're listening to Booked on KD&K Community Radio. Nikki, tell me about the reactions you've heard over these past couple weeks since publishing your story Through the Cracks and that column.
The reactions have been overwhelmingly positive. I've had some heart-wrenching phone calls and emails from people who have family members who suffer from mental illness, or who have suffered and they've lost those family members. I've had a tremendous amount of support from people who have said thank you for bringing this out, for getting this information out into the public, because it shuts down speculation and answers a lot of questions that people had. Just really overwhelmingly positive.
My other guest on the phone is award-winning journalist Susan Green from the Colorado Independent. Susan, why is it important for a paper like the Rio Blanco Herald Times to facilitate a follow-up discussion and engage with the community when covering these tough subjects?
Because it's really easy for people to read a story, and no matter how moved they may be or angry they may be or whatever feelings they have, just sort of go back into silence. And this story, as we wrote, was really shrouded in so much silence. And it really points out all the cracks through which Daniel Pierce fell. So we felt it was necessary to literally bring people into the same room. So that means Lieutenant Roy Kinney, the officer who killed Daniel Pierce, and I think it really needs to be noted, who knew Daniel Pierce very well and also knew that he was in a very serious mental health crisis and had an encounter with him 2 days prior. Bringing him into it, bringing the Rio Blanco sheriff, Anthony Mazzola, into the room, bringing the wife of Daniel Pierce, the estranged wife, into the room. She's from Missouri. Mental health professionals, politicians, et cetera, to literally just the act of convening them, of them being in each other's physical presence and having a couple hours to talk about what can be done moving forward to prevent anyone else like Daniel Pierce from falling through the cracks. We think that's necessary. I mean, journalists are not advocates. We don't have any particular outcome in mind for the event that we're having in Rangeley on the evening of December 2nd. But we do feel that we are conveners. And again, just writing a news story doesn't necessarily do it. We think it's, again, really important to promote some kind of conversation. Wherever that conversation goes, we think, is progress and a step in the right direction.
So this event on December 2nd at 7 p.m. is at the Colorado Northwestern Community College. A conversation about mental illness and law enforcement in rural Colorado, but this problem is pervasive everywhere. Susan, can you talk about how often this seems to happen, that things go badly when law enforcement don't have sufficient training for handling mental health crises?
Yeah, I'm happy to. As you know, I've done a lot of work on excessive force cases. They often, the victims of police or sheriff's deputies, excessive force, often happen to be mentally ill. In many communities, they often also happen to be people of color. And in Denver, where I am located, I've done a bunch of work around very mentally ill people being killed and hurt at the hands of Denver sheriff. So it's by no means just a rural problem. But that said, in a community like Rangeley, they literally have virtually no training at all on how to handle people with mental illness or how even to recognize mental illness. And so in this case, Lieutenant Roy Kinney, who shot Mr. Pierce and, as I said earlier, knew him, had spent probably hours with him over the months that Mr. Pierce lived there. They both smoke, and so Daniel would bum cigarettes, Marlboros, off of the lieutenant, and they would sort of stand around talking. And he had no inkling at all that he was mentally ill until a couple days before his death. The police there received a call that Mr. Pierce was acting a bit strange at the local bank. He was purporting that he was asking for someone who actually was his wife, who lived in Missouri, and threatened to come back a couple days later, saying he was coming back with God. And the lieutenant went to visit him and had what he called the Jesus talk with him, and during which Mr. Pierce purported to be Jesus at certain points, or the Creator, was sort of threatening to blow up or destroy the town. And it was only then, after several encounters with him, did the lieutenant really know that he was mentally ill. And he put in a call to a Mind Springs, their hotline, to sort of let them know about the call and tell them that he had decided not to ask for what's called an M1 hold, which is a an involuntary mental health hold for 72 hours. And the call lasted for 58 seconds. So he he did not really know that there were resources out there to ask for to help Mr. Pierce, and nor did the hotline counselor at MindSprings offer any of those resources. And so it's not just a lack of training, it's a lack of communication about what resources are out there, what kind of new laws we have to help first responders like Mr. Kinney, and what kind of literally money there is, and because these departments often happen to be so short-staffed. Rangeley's Police Department is a three-person department. You know, it's hard for them to send someone for a week-long training on how to really, really understand how to handle people in the public with mental illness. So it's lack of training and a lack of other resources as well, Gavin.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. That's Susan Green, editor of the Colorado Independent and co-author of the investigative journalism piece Through the Cracks, A Sick Stranger, A Police Shooting, and A Town's Silence. Some stories are just more difficult to report on than others. Not every reporter in the state can always call you for help, Susan. I mean, full disclosure, I know a lot of writers who have appreciated your input over the years, present company included. One resource for newsrooms is the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition. Why is their work important when local governments redact documents or refuse to hand them over altogether?
It's important because, especially with shrinking newsrooms and shrinking newspaper budgets and general lack of resources to get folks trained on this, reporters, especially young reporters or inexperienced ones, don't always know the laws and don't always have the sort of intestinal fortitude to press really hard when they're being stonewalled by local government. So the Freedom of Information Coalition backs you up. They are a resource to call when you're getting stonewalled or when you know that there are public documents that aren't being made available when you ask for them. They back you up with advocacy, and they also sometimes back you up with the legal representation. Sometimes a letter needs to be written by a lawyer to the local jurisdiction saying, look, you folks are breaking the open records law, et cetera. So it puts it takes what might be your own soul, your own newsroom's little particular, quest for some documents, and it puts experts on the topic of government transparency and open records behind you. And really, I think what we're seeing lately is a sort of coalescing of the media, all different outlets throughout Colorado. So, you know, if one outlet is having trouble, that municipality might hear from many editors, or there might be editorials throughout the state sort of highlighting that stonewalling. And I think that kind of pressure is really important.
My other guest on the phone is Rio Blanco Herald Times editor Nikki Turner. Nikki, what was the very first question Susan asked you when you reached out for advice on how to approach this story?
So one that we talked about, that, you know, was telling her what was going on, and one of the very first questions that she asked was, did you get the autopsy report for Daniel Pierce? And I at the time, I didn't even know that I could request an autopsy report from a crime or a killing like this. Had no idea.
And in addition to your own learning curve, can you give some more details on the roadblocks you encountered while working on this story? I really want people to read this, and we'll link to it on our website. But tell us about some of the things that slowed this down or that you had to figure out how to work around.
We had some challenges getting information back from the town. They didn't want to release information. They didn't want to release the internal affairs investigation. Susan really handled that side of it, wrote multiple CORAs, or Open Records Act requests, and worked with the Freedom of Information Coalition to get a letter written to get that taken care of. I took kind of a more personal route and set up an interview and went down to meet with what I thought was just going to be the town manager. It turned out to be the town manager and the mayor. And they really, really discouraged me from pursuing the story and said, you know, bad things are going to happen and this is going to stir up a lot of stuff and open a can of worms kind of language if you do this, if you, you know, continue to try and do this. And I said, well, we're going to do this. So you can cooperate or not. And it made it a very tense story for me to publish, very, concerning to publish, because when you've got town officials in one of the towns that you're responsible for covering their news and they really don't want you to cover a story that kind of puts you in an uncomfortable place as an editor and as a reporter. And if honestly, I don't know if I would have that intestinal fortitude. Susan was behind me, pushing me the whole way, and I needed that.
When you worked on this for such a long time, were there times, Nikki, where you thought about giving up on certain aspects, like, well, this storyline, we just can't get around this, or did you somehow know you would get to the truth if you stuck with it, or was that kind of part of how Susan helped as well?
Well, it seemed like everything we did, like every little rock we turned over, the story would change course completely, and it would go a whole different direction, and there would be a whole other aspect of the story to cover and pursue. And so, yeah, there were some parts of it that I was kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to. I don't feel like that needs to be included. I don't feel like that's really pertinent to this particular story. So there was a little bit of, I think, of weeding out that we did, especially there towards the end, because it ended up being, you know, we're a newspaper. It ended up being 4.5 full pages.
Full pages,
of
yeah.
Print.
Well, and you also have a tricky role that some newspapers do and some don't, of being an editor and publisher. And I wonder, was that ever a challenge where you had to think about, you know, the, what's good for the paper or its survival? Is it common for an editor publisher person to be faced with these challenges around, you know, could it hurt our publication to do the right thing here? And it seems like that what you've said about the response from readers, you know, in terms of the net subscriptions, doing the story is good for the newspaper. It's your, you know, but it seems like that's a challenging position to be in.
I looked at it and continue to look at it. It's a risk. I mean, it's a risk that you take, and this story was one that was so compelling, and this story had to be told. It really, really had to be told. And I've since talked to a couple of our former editor/publishers from this paper who preceded me, and they've told me some horror stories about stories that they covered that were difficult and hard-hitting, and they got some backlash and had, you know, had some trouble, and it was hard for the paper because they went ahead and did it. So I think any editor or publisher or even reporter, you have to weigh that, put that out there and say, you know what, this has to be done. It just becomes a matter of journalistic integrity and knowing that this story has to be told. And even if you make someone uncomfortable or someone doesn't appear in a shiny, happy, pretty light,
mm-hmm.
well, they put themselves in that position.
Susan, in your years of covering law enforcement, doing government accountability, investigative reporting, how common are these challenges to getting the truth? Have you seen other reporters or people in Nikki's position give up?
Yeah, I mean, I think aside from a lack of resources or a lack of training or just understaffing at newspapers, I think these are real financial and economic forces at play, that you need to sell subscriptions, you need to sell ads. These are tiny communities Nikki is dealing with. And journalism is one of those weird professions, maybe one of the only industries, that sometimes there's an inverse relationship between the quality of work you do, right? The harder hitting, maybe sometimes more uncomfortable journalism might have a negative impact on your bottom line. So there, it takes a real act of courage. I mean, and this was weeks and weeks of it by Nikki of pushing forward when, and quite frankly, she didn't say it in these words, but it seems to us that the mayor essentially threatened her, don't publish this story. And the mayor and the town manager were telling her the story's over and there is no story. And there never was a story. There was never any public information really about this. And they were just trying to shut her down. And to put this in context, this is probably, you know, one of the biggest news events to happen in Rangeley in decades. And frankly, you know, the only police shooting in, I think, 37 or 38 years in that community. So I think sometimes people are a little dismayed and maybe disappointed by the quality of journalism at local outlets. And I would have to say they might not understand the economic and financial forces at play here and what kind of, we're calling it intestinal fortitude, I'm just going to say bravery it takes for someone like Nikki to step up and pursue this so doggedly.
The article also quotes Daniel Pierce's mother, Rose Nutbrock, and she didn't understand why nobody contacted her when Daniel was killed. Were her feelings a form of motivation to get this story told? Was that one of the factors that pushed you to keep going?
It was like a knife to the heart kind of thing. Like, wow, you didn't do your job, you know, because I didn't pursue it. I didn't really hit it. And I can use all kinds of excuses as far as, well, I don't have time. You know, we don't. People ask, you know, what's your newsroom like? I'm like, it's my office and I'm sitting in it. there's, you know, not enough time, not enough resources, Rangeley 60 miles away. Nobody wanted to talk about it. People didn't answer my emails. I can use excuse after excuse, but when it comes down to it, I didn't do what needed to be done.
Until you did.
Until I had an opportunity to work with someone who could help me do that. And it, you know, I firmly believe that stories like this, not just police shootings, but other stories of consequence are occurring across our state and across our nation. And I believe there are other editors, editor publishers, reporters, there are other journalists out there that are like, I really want to cover this story. I really want to tell this story. But they don't have the resources. I mean, the time that Susan invested in interviews and research and writing CORA requests, I couldn't have done that. I'm putting a paper together every week. I mean, it's pretty much all I can do to put the paper together every week and make sure I get it out. That's a full-time job in and of itself. This is another full-time job on top of it. So having somebody to partner with who could both lead and direct and encourage and then also lift a lot of the load was essential to getting this story out. And I hope that becomes more of a normal thing in Colorado journalism that we see happening more and more often.
Susan, could this be a prototype for more projects where the Colorado Independent offers support to smaller newsrooms?
I really hope so. I think this is the future of journalism. The economics of our industry make it such that we cannot afford to not collaborate. And it's also, you know, I run a nonprofit. The Colorado Independent is a nonprofit. I spend a lot of time fundraising and just running the nonprofit and not necessarily doing the journalism. And for my soul and my heart, this is the work I want to do. This is the work that our managing editor, Tina Griego, really wants to do. We are hoping in 2020 and the years to come to make this transformation, to be able to speak with folks like Nikki and ask them, what's the big story you've got in your backyard and in your coverage area that you need help with, and how can we help? And come in and... Nikki taught me so much about that part of the state, and I was able to help her learn some journalism skills, and this is the way to do it. I think it's a lot better way to train journalists than to have them sit for, you know, a couple hours in a workshop at a convention once a year. I think literally walking them through it together. And, you know, Nikki and I were on the phone every day, sometimes many times a day, constantly texting. I mean, this is intense work. It's about a series of traumas. There's a lot to it. And, you know, I think journalists sort of need to coach each other. And, you know, back to the bravery thing, you know, I've got a lot of people in Denver who have my back and who I can consult when I have difficulties reporting. But if you're a journalist in a rural area like Nikki is, they really need that support too.
That's Susan Green from the Colorado Independent. You can find her online at coloradoindependent.com. And my other guest on the phone, Nikki Turner from the Rio Blanco Herald Times, online at theheraldtimes.com. We will link to this incredible long-form journalism Through the Cracks at our website at kdnk.org. And I just want to thank you both so much for this great work, and good luck with the event on December 2nd, bringing together journalists, community advocates, Rio Blanco County Public Health, Mine Springs, Rangeley Police, Rio Blanco County Sheriff. What an effort, and it can't be easy, but someone's got to do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gavin.
Thank you.